Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to The Beat, everyone. I'm Ari Melber. We're tracking several stories. Memphis and much of the nation awaiting the release of a body cam video in now about an hour. Our coverage of that rare set of murder charges against the ex-officers there in that case will continue later in the program with Maya Wiley. We also have a twist in the trial of Trump aide Peter Navarro that had been slated to start Monday. I have a breakdown on that coming up, a lot of new information, and we'll get into why it matters. The top story right now is new evidence in the continuing domestic terror that this nation faces, right-wing political violence. Authorities releasing new footage from that attack on the spouse of former Speaker Pelosi, Paul Pelosi. The violent and disturbing footage shows the attacker's approach on the Pelosi's home and the horrific attack. I think we can look at this in full. This was 11 days before the midterm election. This is the political violence that many Republican officials failed to condemn or even minimize. Here's what police found when they confronted the intruder.
Yeah, literally sitting there. Hi.
Hey guys.
How you doing?
How are you?
What's going on, man?
Everything's good.
Hi. How Drop the hammer.
Nope.
Hey.
What is going on right now?
I'm not getting an answer on call.
Bro.
That is exactly how it went down, and you can see the difficult decisions police have to make in a situation like that as they appraise the threat, see the attack, and move. The suspect smashed the door as well, trying to get in. You can see that on this somewhat grainy security footage, but it shows how this began. The images show the intruder, basically, as you see on the right part of your screen, making this secretive effort to try to bust his way in. It shows that he was indeed this intruder, not someone who somehow entered as an acquaintance of the family. Authorities have also released a 911 call where Mr. Pelosi seems to be making an effort to request police help, but in a kind of code.
Is the Capitol Police around?
220.
No, this is separate.
They usually protect my wife. They're usually here at the house protecting my wife.
No, this is San Francisco Police.
Friday, October.
No, I understand. 8th. He thinks everything's good. I've got a problem, but he thinks everything's good.
Zero,
okay.
20,
call us back if you change your mind.
No.
This gentleman just came into the house, and he wants to wait here for my wife to come home.
Zero, two,
and so,
4 and 48.
Anyway, he's on the phone.
Do you know who the person is?
No, I don't know who he is. He told me not to do anything.
Now, government officials have long faced a range of threats, but this attacker was specifically echoing the MAGA chants from the infamous insurrection. Quote, where's Nancy? And this attacker acted within a wider right-wing effort to habitually deploy political violence. The FBI recently warning that right-wing terror is now the greatest domestic threat in the United States. This case, an example of that. And that set of remarks was by an FBI director that we can note was appointed by former President Trump. And more leaders in the MAGA movement and the Republican Party are deploying the threat of that violence or the violence itself in an increasingly organized plot to pressure and corrupt the rule of law. We saw that because they were effective in using violence to delay certifying votes for the highest office in the land, votes for president, on January 6th. We see it in Donald Trump publicly supporting efforts to intimidate prosecutors of the FBI from enforcing the law. Donald Trump is right now the top declared Republican candidate for president. And he's running on those authoritarian appeals and vows to pardon the very insurrectionists who attacked the police that day, who sought to assassinate leaders in both parties, including Vice President Pence, and who pushed the targeting of Nancy Pelosi that hit home in this fateful night that we're still learning about and seeing the level of the brutality, the level of the risk, how close a call it was, and how it could have been much worse. By much worse, I mean an assassination, a murder of Mr. Pelosi or the Speaker, had things gone even slightly differently. I want to bring in our experts. Attorney Maya Wiley is CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, and Josh Marshall, a founder of Talking Points Memo. Josh, understanding what happened, how bad it was, and the truth of it, I think is vital, because a big part of the effort is not only to push this stuff, but then to try to downplay it, lie about it, minimize it on the back end. What did we learn today from your view as a journalist who I know doesn't mince words?
Well, I think we saw confirmation that it went down about like we thought it went down. A guy broke into his house, wanted to find Nancy Pelosi there, found Paul Pelosi, wasn't quite sure what to do, and eventually hit him over the head with a hammer. And I think, you know, Pelosi is just off the camera when the hammer strikes him. But I think there's certain things you can only quite appreciate when you see the video. This wasn't like a tap, right? This was like the full force that guy had bringing it down on Paul Pelosi's head. And people over 80 are a bit fragile, right? I mean, I'm sort of surprised that his outcome was as good as it was. I mean, the thing that I keep coming back to about that incident is that the day of, not just sort of crazy people on Twitter, but a lot of mainstream Republican politicians were either making fun of it, questioning exactly what happened. We know what happened with Elon Musk, kind of one of his first star turns in his leadership at Twitter. As you say, that is a component of the campaign of incitement, making fun of it when it happens, not taking it seriously. There was no pulling back that we might have seen in an earlier era when politicians might say, all right, you know, heated campaign, but things got a little out of hand. Let's lower the temperature. We really saw none of that from Republicans. They literally made fun of it after it happened.
Right. And that doesn't come out of just a sort of random scenario where a lot of people picked the same words and strategy that were false, meaning, I just want to be clear, they were false, but also before you knew much, that's a coordinated effort because you seem to think that your movement is really tied to this stuff. So you have to find some way to do that. I want to also show some of the new footage that has the intruder there admitting the plot to hold the speaker hostage.
What was your intention to go there to make her change her ways?
Well, I was going to basically hold her hostage and I was going to talk to her and basically tell her what I do.
And hold her hostage and do what?
And talk to her. If she told the truth, I'd let her go scot free.
Right.
If she lied, I was going to break her down.
That's the audio, Maya, which is how police work happens. I think sometimes people are surprised at how much information you can get from certain types of individuals. He's in his sort of bravado mode, and I'm going to do this and that. But what's key there is he's not denying the core attack.
He's not denying the core attack. And what appears to be clear in listening to this audio is it's because he believes he is justified in his core attack. Now, justified meaning he's willing to perpetrate violence, to commit a violent crime against any human being. I don't care whether you're a sitting member of Congress or not, but in particular, because she is a politician elected by the people of her district to lead, but he doesn't think she's telling the truth because it doesn't map to his conspiracy theory or theories, right? We don't even know how many he had. And that's the point that you and John were speaking about earlier, which is when you have politicians actually pretending like either these debunked conspiracy theories are true, when you have the kind of rhetoric that suggests their opponents on the other side of an aisle, just simply because they don't agree with them ideologically, are somehow dangerous liars, and not decrying, not denouncing, not saying violence is not tolerated, we don't tolerate it, and we recognize truth over lies, something that used to happen in this country that has changed since Trumpism, then we see that not just bravado, but a willingness to harm another human being and feel justified in doing it.
Yeah, you keep going back to that word, and I think it's so important because that's what, when we say there's formal authority, it's okay, you have that job, but there's also the what used to be called the moral authority or the leadership of different individuals. And when this is co-signed in this way, you see that the actual number of people who are coming out to do this, according to the FBI, goes up. And we can be very careful, Maya, that we both know proving a causal case from that is difficult in court for good reason. But this isn't just court. We're also talking about contributing to that violence, the people who push the dehumanization of other people and launder and push racism, and then you have more hate crimes, right? Whether you can convict them is over here. That's one thing. But boy, are they morally responsible. And we have to have that accountability in our society. I want to go to the point you make about justification, and it connects with Josh, what you were saying about what people think and the truth out there. Here's how some of this was playing in Fox News, which has been, depending on the hour, adjacent to some of this crap. And then, oh boy, facts. Take a look at this fact check exchange today.
Where is the evidence of a breaking and entering? I get what you're saying, Sandra, about always casing the area.
There's video of him breaking through the house. There's video of him breaking.
I haven't seen a video of him breaking through the house.
Okay, it's on the screen right now.
Okay.
I assume it's with the hammer that you later see him with. But there's clear video that we have been given outside of the house, the attackers on the right side of the screen, breaking through the house.
Got it. Great. Then maybe that's
true. He's clearly using that to break in.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Josh. I don't want to be at all flip about something this serious. But who among us hasn't been with someone who says crap, then you give them the facts, and they say, well, I haven't seen that, to which you want to say, we know, because you sound like an idiot or a liar.
Yeah.
That's why we're giving you obviously you haven't seen it, or you're a liar and you don't want to see it. And so I say that with a bit of a sardonic tone, if you will, on this Friday night. But of course, the implications are serious, Josh.
We can add some more. I mean, you know, it's important in Fox world to keep the script up with the you know, emerging facts. I think, you know, we have to go back to the difference between legal responsibility and moral responsibility.
Yeah.
When you are what I don't know who that guest was on Fox there, but when you are doing that, you are, in essence, running interference for the attacker. You are, you know, deciding that you are sort of that person's defense attorney in the court of public opinion. Because, you know, what do we think happened? You know, he broke into the guy's house. So this guy's still trying to say, well, you know, maybe Paul Pelosi let him in, all this kind of stuff. That's complicity, not legal complicity, but moral complicity. That makes a person, that makes a movement a participant in the campaign of violence, not legally responsible,
right,
but morally responsible.
Right.
Because you are, again, running interference for the person in the court of public opinion. And we all need to take responsibility for when we do that.
Yeah, I'm going to run it back. We rarely do that, Maya. And, you know, offset afterward, Maya may say, how much Fox are you going to make me watch? But I want to run it back because this is the point, because people are at conversations at bars and diners and dinner parties where you got the person says, well, I haven't seen. Well, take a look. We'll look at that, Fox. Same clip again.
Where is the evidence of a breaking and entering? I get what you're saying, Sandra, about always casing the area.
There's video of him breaking through the house. There's video of him
breaking through the house.
Okay, it's on the screen right now.
Okay.
I assume it's with the hammer that you later see him with. But there's clear video that we have been given outside of the house, the attackers on the right side of the screen, breaking through the house.
Got it. Great. Then maybe that's true.
He's clearly using that to break in.
Yeah.
Ari, you owe me big. For making me watch that twice.
Twice.
But here's the thing. Josh is absolutely right about moral complicity, but it becomes almost societal complicity when you have a whole bunch of people doing just that. When you have a what is called a news network that has often actually said things that are not true knowingly, and where they're talking points over facts and no consequences. Social consequences, not talking about legal, social consequences for saying you can not only lie, you can dismiss those facts even when they endanger people. It's why we had January 6th.
Yeah.
It is why we have seen organized hate and extremist groups able to increase some of their recruitment, because you have legitimate politicians, people with power, business leaders running around saying things that are not true. And I think it's important to say this. We have seen the rise since 2008. We've seen the rise of this since 2008.
Yep.
And there is simply no question that this is related to anti-Semitism. It is related to anti-black racism. We've seen it related to a rise in anti-Asian violence.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it connected to so many different aspects of just simply having a society that is diverse, that has many viewpoints, and where we're supposed to have a democratic system where there are consequences if you don't hold the norms of democracy. And that is what we have seen fail, because of political leaders, because of people in power, because of business leaders, and it is exactly why we have a problem of violence rising today.
Yeah, it's so important the way you brought it out. Look, the Oath Keepers were created in 2009 in response to a black president. And some of what they initially did was perfectly protected by free speech, although it was very clearly concerned about the idea that Obama was running the country. That was 2009. By 2023, they're convicted of sedition. Do the math. I want to thank both of you for this serious conversation. Josh, have a good weekend. Maya comes back on another important story, because we are now awaiting, about 45 minutes out from the scheduled release, of a video that it wasn't clear when it was going to come out. But it will have the police conduct that is now the subject of a five different officers being charged with murder, the beating of Tyre Nichols. That is later tonight. Maya comes back on that topic. We also have Republicans basically embracing one of the coup enablers as the leader of the party, which is another round for Trumpism, obviously related. But coming up next, my breakdown on a huge twist in the Peter Navarro trial, which was slated to start on Monday. I'm back with you in 60 seconds.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The Peter Navarro criminal trial was slated to start Monday. He was finally facing judgment day for defying the January 6th committee. The former Trump aide was subpoenaed after discussing his active role in the coup plot, or sweep, on the beat. Unlike most Trump figures, Navarro detailed and then basically admitted how they wanted to overthrow the election, then defied the subpoena, which led to his surprise arrest.
They put me in handcuffs. They bring me here. They put me in leg irons. They stick me in a cell. That's punitive. That what they did to me today violated the Constitution.
Now, the trial set for Monday was just today delayed. It's kind of the first good procedural news Mr. Navarro has gotten in this case in quite some time. The judge allowing extra time for pretrial debate over the role executive privilege could play when the case reaches a jury. A different outlet put the news as more of a setback for Navarro in the long run, reporting the ruling does allow Navarro to argue Trump had invoked executive privilege, and a jury should be able to decide whether that happened, but that the judge has spurned the key point in the case. Now, the judge is trying to show fairness about Mr. Navarro's right to make this argument and to ensure there's an orderly plan for how these subjects arise in the trial, which, again, is going to apparently take more time. Now, none of this reveals how much a jury will approach the claims, whether they will convict Navarro, like the jury that convicted Bannon on the very same charge, or if a jury might find Navarro's claims different. Unlike Bannon, Navarro was inside the White House during the plot to overturn the election. But today's ruling refocuses attention on a major problem for Navarro, who will go on trial eventually one way or the other. The problem is claiming that Donald Trump invoked privilege for Navarro. That did not happen during the January 6th probe, ever. Committee members stressed that when they held Navarro in contempt.
Navarro then appears to fall back on the vague assertion that the executive privilege here belongs to former President Trump. Entirely irrelevant, because our committee has not been given any attempted invocation of executive privilege by Donald Trump.
There was no Trump privilege. Not when Navarro was subpoenaed, nor held in contempt, nor when he was later arrested. And in today's ruling for this delay, the judge says there is no evidence Trump invoked privilege. Now, while our interviews with Navarro focused on his coup plot, and that made its own headlines, I did also press him on this very glaring legal hole that he was claiming to wage a fight on behalf of privilege that Donald Trump didn't invoke for him.
What is being attacked here is executive privilege. This is the most important issue. I read your filing.
Your problem, sir, is it doesn't exist for you yet because Donald Trump doesn't have your back. You say you're standing tall and going to the mat. You're clearly demonstrating.
Let me finish, sir. Let's just stop.
Peter, let me finish, and then I'm going to let you respond. You say it's counterfactual, so let me give you some facts.
As you would say when we debate, that's false, okay? So that's false.
Okay, so let me show the evidence, and then you get to respond. So here's the evidence. I'm going to say it so people hear it clearly. Executive privilege does exist and can be litigated. The former president has not invoked it publicly or in writing for you. Can you answer once and for all why you should have privilege if Trump won't say it?
Jamie Raskin, okay, can talk all he wants. The president is not going to cooperate with a kangaroo committee run by people like Raskin and Adam Schiff. And one of the things I do in the lawsuit, Ari, based on case law, is I go over what's called the legislative history of each of the seven Democrats on that nine-member committee. And it's relevant,
Ari. But you admit that Trump has not invoked privilege for you. But Peter, you acknowledge Trump. This is important, Peter, and I'll let you respond. It's just a question. It won't take long. It's not going to take long. Peter, you acknowledge that Trump has not invoked privilege for you.
I haven't acknowledged anything. All I've said to you, Ari, is that in terms of whatever Raskin says, don't take that to the bank. My point here is it's not my privilege to waive, okay? Let me be clear about this. It's not my privilege to waive. And also, as a senior White House official, here's what's interesting, Ari. I have absolute testimonial immunity.
He says he hasn't acknowledged anything. Now, that was a back and forth. There's a reason why I was bearing down on that with him, and perhaps a reason why he strained so much not to give an answer then in real time over the very simple question, if you say you have this presidential privilege, did the president invoke it? That was his claim for defying the committee. It was his claim for decrying his arrest. Now it's his claim for trying to stay out of prison. But let me tell you, tonight, trials have a way of bringing things into focus. That's the case for Richard Barnett, convicted after a trial this week for his role on January 6th. Guilty, all eight counts. That was the case for Bannon, Navarro's co-conspirator in the coup or sweep, convicted for defying the committee. And we're seeing some of this happen for Navarro because there's a new document that I'm going to tell you about right now for the first time in this case, which proves Peter Navarro did not have a privilege claim from Trump at any point during the January 6th committee probe. Navarro was incorrect to imply otherwise, and it's exactly what I was bearing down on in that exchange, which again got less attention or notice perhaps than him admitting the sweep, but is important right now. And let me tell you about this document. This is bad news for Navarro, and it is from a Trump lawyer who just now is writing to Navarro saying that Navarro had an obligation to assert privilege for Trump, but the letter is from this week. I'm going to leave it up here for you. January 23rd, 2023. Brand new. We're reporting this for the first time. It's a confession. It means there was no privilege invoked when Navarro was subpoenaed or any time last year or even the entire duration while the committee was operating. None. Now, on the very eve of trial, a ruling today, Friday before a Monday trial, now delayed, somebody got a Trump lawyer to claim in this sort of roundabout language that they now have a view of privilege. And that's why the judge overseeing the case says there was no privilege, and why, among other reasons, Navarro faces a tough slog when this trial does start. This is an individual who has his reasons for why he did what he did, and why he talked about what he did, and then why he wouldn't in any way follow the laws that govern all of us and respond to the committee about whether he would talk about it. Now, only he knows why he picked that approach. Only he knows why he thought he could help overthrow an election and then hide behind legal concepts like privilege without ever responding to the committee or sending them back a letter with a privilege at that time. But we got a big clue in this letter. Trump never gave him the privilege last year, just as we suspected in our exchange. Now, what happens next on this case, as well as the fallout over this big expose of Bill Barr? Veteran prosecutor Joyce Vance is here on both of these stories next.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
They put me in handcuffs. They bring me here. They put me in leg irons. They stick me in a cell. That's punitive. That what they did to me today violated the Constitution.
Trump aide Peter Navarro, after his arrest, we're joined by former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance. Monday's trial now delayed over privilege issues while the judge says there was no privilege asserted, and the new letter seems to, in a way, confirm that. Your view of this development in the case, Joyce?
Well, it does. I think your assessment of that letter is very important, Ari, and it helps us understand what the judge is doing. The judge isn't looking ahead to the trial. He's looking ahead to the appeal and making sure that there's an airtight record so the Court of Appeals will uphold a verdict if the government gets one down the road, because the judge will have fully explored the legal issues, the jury will hear the facts, and there will be a record for the Court of Appeals to hang its hat on.
Yeah. One of Mr. Navarro's lawyers made a statement in court that I want to read to you for your analysis. You, as I remind viewers, you ran a whole U.S. attorney's office. You know your way around both prosecuting trials and overseeing them. This was striking. They called it a quip in some of the reporting that among the many issues the legal team would have to overcome would be with Navarro testifying, were that to happen. He would be, quote, calling my malpractice career before I put Navarro on the stand. It seems to be a reference to the idea that you wouldn't want to put Mr. Navarro on the stand. Now, I'll say in all fairness, many attorneys don't want clients on the stand as a general matter. But as described as a quip or whatever, what did you think of that? What does that seem to be implying?
The decision about whether or not to testify is always ultimately in the hands of the client. The lawyer advises them. In a case where the client wants to act contrary to the lawyer's advice, the judge often will hold a hearing on the record for precisely the reason the lawyer here identifies. You know, this is a situation that's fraught. No lawyer wants to put Peter Navarro on the witness stand. And we know exactly why, Ari. We've watched you cross-examine him, and he does not hold up well.
Did you think the malpractice comment is just kind of lawyer talk, like they're joking around in court, or would you say it's not necessarily what a client would want to hear about himself?
I think that those words may have come out of the lawyer's mouth unintentionally in a moment of honesty.
All right, fair. I also want to get you on this reporting about the Barr Justice Department. Mr. Durham was handpicked by Barr, pursuing things that Donald Trump wanted to prove about the deep state. It seems to really have blown up in their face. It's also putting new scrutiny on some of what Mr. Barr did, the sort of political side of how he tried to, many people say, compromise the department where you once worked. The Times report, which we covered yesterday, has chock full of details. It puts heat on things like what I'm about to show folks, the archive that shows how Mr. Barr was using or exploiting this criminal probe to promise coming information. Take a look.
Evidence shows that we're not dealing with just mistakes or sloppiness. There was something far more troubling here. The president has every right to be frustrated because I think what happened to him was one of the greatest travesties in American history without any basis.
This Times report cites those comments, among others, as basically being proven wrong. Your view of that story?
The Justice Department is not meant to be a political tool that the White House can deploy to serve its purposes. DOJ is not supposed to do the president's bidding. And yet what we have in this reporting, this is remarkable reporting on the front page of the New York Times. And it confirms that Bill Barr, whether he did it because Donald Trump wanted him to do it or for some other reason, was using the department's resources to go contrary to both where the facts should have led him, to where the law have said should have led him, and was willing to engage in what in essence became the weaponization of the federal government, right? The irony that the House now has a committee that's investigating that. We see it in real time here, confirmed in that reporting.
Yeah, it's sort of psychological and political projection, at least according to the New York Times, that it was what you said, Barr trying and failing. And then that prosecutor's cases blew up in his face as well. I guess the silver lining is we still have a system where judges and juries have that final word. It's not just Mr. Barr, you know, sending in his conspiracy theories. Joyce, I appreciate you here on the two stories, and I hope you have a good weekend.
You too, Ari.
Absolutely. As we get to the end of the hour, we have an unusual countdown. It's a schedule that was set by law enforcement where we're going to see what has been described as an appalling video, but a necessary piece of evidence in what is now a murder case against five former officers. That's coming up tonight. Maya Wiley comes back on that. But first, next, we have the coup politics as a Trump loyalist gets another round leading the RNC. When Republicans underdelivered in the midterms, there was a fresh round of talk about a new direction, new leaders. Whether you break away for Trump or not, there was definitely an expectation that the RNC, with no incumbent president, might want to just rethink things. Well, tonight we have an update on that. A top Trump ally and a coup enabler, Ronna McDaniel, reelected today to run the RNC again. Now, the January 6th committee had found she was the one who actually worked directly with some of the people that Congress has now recommended for indictment, like John Eastman, to work on elector fraud, on that plot with the president's lawyer and the president and ensnaring the RNC. Of course, it was also the RNC that tried to back up what is now a convicted sedition plot as, quote, legitimate political discourse. Fact check, false. And then there's all of the parroting of MAGA.
I don't believe that President Trump wanted people to attack the Capitol, and he condemned that.
President Trump didn't choose me because I'm a woman. He chose me because I was the best person for the job.
I'm proud of this president. I'm going to vote for him again. I'm excited to work on his reelect. I think he's done the things that he campaigned on.
I hear people every day say he fought for us. He gave us a voice. He's somebody who listened to the average voter and fought for us in Washington. And now they feel their voices are being diminished under Joe Biden.
It's January 2023. To start the new year, meet your new Republican Party chair. She is your old Republican Party chair. Now, we're going to fit in a break, but I want to turn next to something that many around the nation are bracing for: the release of the video underlying the murder charges for five former officers. Maya Wiley returns on an important story. We're approaching the 7 p.m. hour on the East Coast, and that is now, tonight, a significant marker in a law enforcement probe, because it will be the release of a video we've reported on but have not seen yet that has been described by multiple parties who, through the process, have seen it as appalling, inhumane, sickening. It's the video of the police beating that occurred in Memphis. The video is now criminal evidence to charge five former officers with murder. That is a rare charge for police regarding any on-duty activity, but it is for the apparent beating and killing of a 29-year-old, Tyree Nichols, who was initially pulled over in a traffic stop. Now, the family then released a photo of Tyree in the hospital. This was before he died from those injuries sustained by the officers in the beating. It was about 3 days after this photo that he died. The family released this and something that I have told you about, a grim process where, in certain cases, especially involving the police brutality against black and brown people in America, the families have to do extra work, advocacy, publicity, in a very real sense, in any quest or hope for justice. Now, this case has moved very differently. We've reported on that, and Maya Wiley is here as we await the video. The coverage will continue on MSNBC tonight after this program. I can also tell you today that the Memphis police chief spoke to NBC a little bit about what will be on the video.
How would you describe the energy of the officers that pulled over Tyree Nichols?
On a scale of 1 to 10, they were at a 10.
Is that not police protocol?
No, it's not police protocol. It was obvious to me that what I saw was beyond the scope of what is condoned in this police department and any department I've ever worked in before. Completely next level, completely outside of, you know, humanity. I'm not even going to say training. I mean humanity.
It's a very direct and stark approach from the police chief. It's also extremely different from how most active police leaders and police unions deal with these situations. If you watch the news, you've seen it, you've heard it, you've heard the calls that it will take months or years to deal with these cases, that people can't discuss them or comment on them. You're seeing a different type of leadership against, of course, what many say is the same kind of police brutality lower in the ranks. The Nichols family has been calling on everyone in the community to be peaceful no matter what. That is to say, they want the truth out there, they want the video evidence out there, but they're demanding, on behalf of the moral authority that they wield, that people be peaceful. They've seen the video, we haven't. They may know why they expect a range of responses. Tyree's mother today saying this:
I loved him to death.
Yes.
And so this is very difficult for me. This shouldn't have happened.
No, that's right.
This just shouldn't have happened. And we want justice for my son. Justice for my son. No mother, no mother, no mother should go through what I'm going through right now.
Maya Wiley's back with us. Maya?
No mother, except that when it comes to traffic stops, there is reams of evidence that driving while black is dangerous, and that what we are being prepared for, and I think rightly being prepared for and being told the truth about how inhumane, how abhorrent what we're going to see is also something that we have to and must and can actually stop. Mm-hmm. It starts with what we heard from the police commissioner, which is being honest about it being not just a violation of patrol, but actually wrong, inhuman, not tolerated. That matters. Her honesty and directness matters, mm-hmm. and it's going to matter to the community. But it's also that, you know, if you were Dante Wright, 20 years old, dead because he had an expired registration, or Patrick Leoya from Grand Rapids, shot in the back of the head because the license plate on his car didn't match the car, or a Sandra Bland, who is dead, 28 years old, because apparently she was changing lanes without signaling. These are not criminal justice issues that demand a gun or a taser or a fist.
And according to the authorities, the crime here was when the officers showed up.
Yes. And one of the things I hope police departments emulate from what we've seen in Memphis is that, in addition, this police commissioner came out and said, remember the officers said, well, they're former officers yep. now, said, well, you know, reckless driving. And she came out and said there's no evidence of reckless driving. No evidence. That's also important honesty. It will be evidence that there is no evidence to substantiate, apparently, that there was any legitimate reason even for the stop. And one thing I want to make sure everyone in the audience knows is the research shows that black people are not only more likely to be stopped for traffic violations. This is in the absence of uncovering any evidence of wrongdoing, any weapon, and that people who are white when they're stopped are more likely to be found with evidence of a crime mm-hmm. or a weapon.
Yeah, it's important to put it in the context of the data, and that what you have here, according to the authorities, is that the officers created the crime. That's the murder scene. And yet we're also up against what we're going to have in the coming minutes, and our coverage will continue, which is a community roiled by this and seeing something that everyone has described as horrific. So that's both part of the truth telling, the accountability, but then also the family pleading for people in the community not to overreact or to react in the wrong way, that there is a process that has so long been distrusted, and yet violence is not the answer to violence. So Maya Wiley, we appreciate you as always on these tough stories.
Thank you,
Maya. As mentioned, this is a tough night for Memphis. Many in America watching it. MSNBC's coverage will continue, including on whatever is shown in the release of that video coming up.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.